as we were trying to say. The Lord is Achintya. What was that?
So thank you for speaking tonight. Please continue.
Thank you for the translation. Krishna is Achintya, which means inconceivable. His qualities, pastime, his holy name, they reside beyond the reach of the senses and any empiric ability. We can know something about Krishna, but we can't know Krishna in truth, as he says in Bhagavad Gita, except by pure devotional service. So if the Lord is inconceivable, inaccessible, Achintya, what is our hope of knowing him? That is due to the mercy of another one of his qualities, which is his omnipotence. Since he's omnipotent, he has the ability to make himself known. And there's a specific agency, which is a number of agents, through whom he makes himself known. And that is a specific type of soul. How many types of souls are there, categorically? There's Vishnu Tattva, and there's his consorts who are Shakti Tattva. There's Shiva Tattva, who's very difficult to comprehend, being a combination of divine and non-divine. There's Jiva Tattva, which is us. And then there's one other category of Tattva. What is that? Yeah, there's Dham Tattva also. I'm talking about souls, type of souls. Dham is an assembly of souls, a community of souls. There's one other type of soul. Very important. Guru Tattva. Which comes from the Jiva category. But it is one who is accepted by Krishna as being exceptional in humility and compassion, and therefore capable of serving as the extended hand of Sri Krishna to take us to him. Shyamananda Pandit, whose disappearance we're observing tonight, comes from this category. And it is a very important aspect of Gaudiya culture to observe the appearance and disappearance of these great souls, who are like the guiding souls for humanity, enlightening and inspiring our path in their footsteps. And they're precious examples of selfless sacrifice in hardships endured on our behalf and for their respective causes and missions has a spiritual kind of electromagnetic effect that generates in the minds of man a desire to emulate them. They descend solely for the welfare of the world, not for any selfish purpose of their own. Coming as an ocean of compassion. And their heart-rending prayers are irresistible to the Lord. So when they pray on our behalf, Krishna takes notice, and therefore these great souls are our only shelter. Shamananda Pandit came from a Bengali family of gopas who moved to Orissa. He appeared in this world about 1 year after Mahaprabhu disappeared. And since so many of the children who preceded him in the family all died at birth, his parents named him Dukhi, which means sorrowful, hoping to remind Yamaraj of the difficulty his family had endured so that they would spare this one child. Now Dukhi heard the glories of Lord Gauranga from his parents, who exalted in the holy name. And they noticed a spiritual predilection in Dukhi, which was very unusual for the Gopa caste. And therefore, by the time he was in his teens, they told him that whoever you accept as a guru, we will support. You're going to his shelter. And Dukhi already had his mind completely made up. My guru is Hriday Chaitanya in Ambika Kalana, serving the Gornitai of his guru Maharaj, Goridas Pandit. And I want to go serve at that temple. Now, for those interested in ontology, Goridas Pandit is Subalsaka. And this pastime is actually probably the most instructive of all in the dynamics of Guru Tattva, as well as a theme that was very prominent around the time of last Gaura Purnima, which is how our only approach to Radha and Krishna is through Gornitai. So Goridas Pandit had a very, he personified Sakya Bhav, friendship with the Lord, to such an extent that Lord Gauranga and Nityananda personally came to his ashram and posed for a sculptor to carve deities, which normally Lord Chaitanya would not allow during his manifest Leela, but for his intimate Sakya, Subal, in the form of Goridas Pandit, he complied. Therefore, the deities have an uncanny resemblance to the lords themselves, carved out of neem wood. Now, there was a very spontaneous relationship between these deities and their servant, Goridas Pandit. There was Lord Gauranga came to a festival at Ambika Kalana. Gaura and Nityananda together, they came, and they were dancing in the kirtan as Goridas Pandit was offering artiks to the deities on the altar. So there's two sets of Gornitai, one dancing in the kirtan, one standing on the altar. But the one standing on the altar wanted to join the kirtan, so they jumped off and joined in the kirtan, and Goridas Pandit's offering artik to an empty altar. Now you know, gopas can be quite, what's the word? Spirited? So he took a stick and he ran after the Gornitai and demanded, "Get back on the altar." And they were so fearful, they didn't dance back onto the altar. They danced into the heart of Goridas Pandit's dear disciple, Hridayananda. They danced into his heart, for which he was thereafter named Hriday Chaitanya. Hrid means heart, as we know. And in his heart, Hrid is Chaitanya. Hriday Chaitanya. So, Ever since, the darshans are extremely brief because the pujaris are afraid that if these deities become too attached to their devotees or their kirtans, they may leave the altar again. So it's called firefly darshan. So it's hearing these pastimes that Dukhi developed such affection without even meeting Hriday Chaitanya. So he went to Ambika Kalna to take shelter, Hriday Chaitanya, who conveyed to Dukhi everything he had learned from Gauridas Pandit, his Guru Maharaj. And eventually he took initiation and was given the new name Krishnadas, or Dukhi Krishnadas, which means the unfortunate servant of Krishna. Eventually he went on long pilgrimage, especially through Gauramandala, seeking out the associates of Lord Gauranga who were still living in this world. He went to Navadvip Dham, to Puri, to Vrindavan. In Vrindavan, Sridas took him on Parikrama, first to Radhakund, where he met Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami and Raghunath Das Goswami, and just wept in love to see their intense devotion and love. He eventually came back to Ambika Kalna, and at this time, Jiva Goswami had just opened an advanced school of theology in Vrindavan. And Hriday Chaitanya sent Dukhi Krishnadas there to study. And with his arrival, Jiva Goswami wept in ecstasy, seeing that Lord Gauranga's plan is unfolding more and more. Because in that school already was Narottam Das Thakur and Srinivas Acharya. So the three became like brothers with so much affection for one another. And studying under Jiva Goswami, who revealed to Dukhi Krishnadas the confidential truths of spontaneous devotional service, Dukhi Krishnadas developed intense devotion for Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. And his services included bringing water for Jiva Goswami and sweeping the Kalpa Kunj Kutir, which is the site of Radha and Krishna's Rasa Lila. Now we'll be discussing tonight some pastimes that are inevitably esoteric, but we don't worry, there will not be anything intimate discussed here. So sweeping the dust of the holy dham at the site of Rasa Lila, Dukhi Krishnadas became so immersed in transcendental ecstasy . And one night, during the Rasa Lila, the dance became unwieldy, spontaneous, uncontrollable. And as the gopis jumped in and out of various circles, Srimati Radharani lost her ankle bracelet. And after returning home that night, knowing that she lost it, she sent Lalita Devi to find it. The first one to find the ankle bracelet was Dukhi Krishnadas, who upon seeing it immediately knew this is an ornament from another dimension altogether, because the whole kunj was aglow glowing golden from the radiance of this ankle bracelet. So he touched it to his head, and he fainted. And when he came to, his complexion had also changed from dark to golden. And they began chanting in ecstasy, running around, He Radhe Brajadevike Chalalite, He Nanda Shunokutha, Hey Radhe, hey Krishna, where are you? So Lalita Devi came, disguised as an old lady, and she saw Duki Krishnadas infused with spiritual ecstasy and knew that he had found the ankle bracelet. So she asked him, Did you find my daughter's ankle bracelet? She's very careless and lost it somewhere. So I've come to take it back to her. And Duki Krishnadas said, I know whose ankle bracelet it is, and I'll only give it to you if you abandon your disguise and reveal your true identity to me. And she said, that would be too much for you to bear. And he said to her, by your grace, anything is possible. So she revealed her ontological form, and sure enough, it was too much, and he fainted in ecstasy. She placed his lotus feet upon his head and told him that, I confess, I'm not the old lady, she's not my daughter, I'm Lalita Devi, I'm taking the ankle bracelet back to my mistress, who is pleased with you as am I. Therefore, you can ask any benediction and I will award it. So all he asked was that I forever serve Radha and Krishna under your shelter and guidance. So she took the ankle bracelet, moved it in a mystical fashion, and touched it upon his head, and blessed him. May the touch of Radha's feet be impressed upon your head. In a spontaneous tilak mark unique to the Shyamanandi Sampradaya appeared on his head, and he again fell unconscious. And Lalita Devi told him, your new name is Shyamananda, because you have brought Ananda, bliss, to Shyama. But don't tell anybody except Jiva Goswami what actually transpired today. So he bowed down, Lalita disappeared. Duki Krishnadas came back to Jiva Goswami's ashram, and Jiva Goswami saw that he has a new golden complexion, a new tilak, and he's infused with an ecstasy of Madhurya. And he asked him, what happened? And Duki Krishnadas told him that I have received the zenith of Sri Guru's grace. And he told the whole story. And he told Jiva Goswami that you and I have to be consistent in our theme, that because there's going to be controversy and people are going to be asking questions, and you, Jiva Goswami, are sworn to secrecy above and beyond your own reputation. He didn't tell him that, but that was inferred, and it was obvious. So when people ask, they agree. All we can say is, this is all by Sri Guru's grace. Now, throughout this pastime, you will be rehearing repeatedly different levels and dimensions of this is all by the grace of Hriday Chaitanya. So take note of that statement. It's going to repeat numerous times on deeper dimensions. So this created much talk in Vrindavan. Dukhi Krishnadasa's new name, new tilak, and golden complexion, and most of all, his new mood, which was no longer Sakyabhav, like that of his guru, but is Madhuryabhav, like that of Jiva Goswami. And then the rumors soon reached Ambika Kalana, where they created more controversy. Has Dukhi Krishnadas been unfaithful to his Guru Maharaj and adopted another guru and taken reinitiation? There's evidence to support that conclusion. And Hriday Chaitanya was wondering, how could he do this? So he sent his disciples from Ambika Kalana to evaluate the situation. And Hriday Chaitanya told him, whatever you do, do not challenge Jiva Goswami. Just humbly inquire what actually happened. So Jiva Goswami said that when I saw his new complexion and his new tilak and his new ecstasy and his new bhava, I asked him what happened. And he explained to me that he, while performing his menial service of sweeping the kunj, he was so absorbed in his service that in a dream, Hriday Chaitanya came to him here in Vrindavan. And he seated his Guru Maharaj and worshipped him properly. And Hriday Chaitanya was so pleased with his humility that he blessed him with personal service to Radha's kunj, and due to the pleasure he had brought to Radha, Hriday Chaitanya awarded him this new name in the dream, Shyamananda. And when Hriday Chaitanya put his feet on Krishnadasa's head, it created this new impression, this Shyamananda, Shyamanandi tilak mark. So Jiva Goswami just reiterated what Dukhi Krishnadas had been saying all along, which is what? This is all by the grace of Hriday Chaitanya. Now keep that in mind, because it's going to keep recurring on deeper levels. So the disciples came back to Ambika Kalana, told Hriday Chaitanya, they were completely satisfied by the story, and they narrated it. Hriday Chaitanya heard that? I never came to him in a dream. At least not that I can remember. How can he be putting such stock in the dreaming state? Dreams are always fallacious. So then he decided to go himself with a large assembly of mahants, his own disciples, the remaining disciples of Gauridas Pandit. They went to Vrindavan again. And Jiva Goswami received them with such respect, and Dukhi Krishnadas fell down like a stick offering dandavats to his Guru Maharaj, and Hriday Chaitanya challenged him. To whom is Krishnadas offering his obeisances? He said, to you, my Guru Maharaj, and all these mahants. And he said, your devotion to me is testified by your new name, your new tilak, your new complexion, and new bhava. Not by some superficial display of false humility. And then he explained, dreams can never be accepted as truth. And this story of this bogus dream is inexcusable. I will expose this charade for what it is. I will arrange an assembly of Mahants so that you can confess this grievous sin that you have committed, and the association of great souls possesses the power to forgive you of that offense. Otherwise, you cannot be saved. And I will write, Hrithi Chaitanya is saying, I will write this name, Shyamananda, across your chest, and I will take soap and water and wash it off to reveal how fictitious this whole story is. And if you do not confess, if you do not accept the truth, then I will be disgraced and I will give up my life. Only if, when I wash off that name, if it mystically reappears, then only will I accept your story. So Shyamananda Pandit bowed down before his Guru Maharaj. He appeared before the huge assembly of saints who questioned them, almost bordering on interrogation. Who is your guru? And who gave you this new name in Tilak? And he bowed down before all of them and he said, Hrithi Chaitanya is my master. And before he could elaborate, they overrode and admonished him emphatically that dreams are unsubstantial. Just confess that you've accepted another guru. The assembly of devotees holds the power to absolve you of this sin. And he was so humble and submissive. He simply begged, can I have time to prepare myself emotionally? And they granted that. And he entered into a deep state of meditation. It was actually a state of samadhi. He chanted the mantra which Lalita had given him, and he found himself in Goloka Vrindavan outside of Srimati Radharani's home, weeping bitterly in his ontological form of Kanaka Manjari. In no time, the other Manjaris, who were very tender-hearted and compassionate, gathered around her and asked, why are you lamenting so bitterly? And she said, with tears of love mixed with despair, she narrated an allegorical story about her plight in the material world. And the Manjaris conveyed that to Lalita, who was serving Radha at the time and couldn't leave. So Radha said, bring her here. They brought Kanaka Manjari before Srimati Radharani. Lalita Devi embraced her. Radha placed her feet upon her head. And he prayed, O Supreme Goddess, please hear my story, the most pitiful plight ever heard. In the external realm, I am a servant of Hrithi Chaitanya, who sent me here to Jiva Goswami's shelter, who has helped me immensely, especially in meditation and service upon you and your beloved Krishna. And I beg you to resolve this current dilemma. So Srimati Radharani called Subal. Subal, take care of this. And Subal, she said, take care of this in a way that will pacify all parties. So Subal told his own story about his descent into this world as Gauridas Pandit. And he said, don't worry. Just remember me, your Param Guru, and I will resolve everything. When Hrithi Chaitanya writes that name across your chest, just remember me, and you will emerge victorious. And simply assure them that what? This is all by the grace of Hrithi Chaitanya. So Kanaka Manjari was speechless. Tears were flowing from her eyes. And then Srimati Radharani prophesied that at the conclusion of this dilemma, everyone will find themselves having come closer to one another, closer to home, and closer to the shelter and service of Sri Sri Radhan Krishna. And you, Kanaka Manjari, as Shyamananda Pandit, will evangelize all of Orissa in the company of Rasikananda, and everything will end in bliss. Well, at that time, Shyamananda Pandit had no desire to go to Orissa. He'd never heard of Rasikananda. Meanwhile, in the assembly of Mahants, seeing this dookie, well, it's by now being accepted that his name is Shyamananda, although nobody really knew why, in their midst was clearly in a state of samadhi, and they were beginning to wonder, who is this great soul in our midst? So Jiva Goswami began kirtan, and because only he could see what was happening in the inner reality, the sound of the kirtan brought Shyamananda Pandit back to external consciousness. He jumped up, shouting, Hriday Chaitanya, Hriday Chaitanya, I am ready for your trial. Write that name across my chest and wash it with soap and water. So he did. Hriday Chaitanya wrote the name Shyamananda Pandit, not Pandit yet, Shyamananda, across the chest of Dukhi Krishnadas, washed it off with soap and water. It almost disappeared, and then it came back more vivid than before. And Hriday Chaitanya was proud of the mystical defeat by his uncommon disciple. And it seemed like everything was resolved. How often do we go through that here in New Vrindavan? Only to find another level. So everybody was happy, and they were getting along so well, and they were convinced that everything was resolved. So they went off on parikrama. And at Sanket, there was a traveling group of actors performing Rasalila. And everyone watched with great appreciation except Shyamananda, who again went into samadhi and actually entered into the Rasalila. So when the rest of his guru's party left, he just stayed there in Sanket, immersed in samadhi. And then Hriday Chaitanya began to wonder, perhaps this whole dilemma is not resolved at all. Shyamananda Pandit, not Pandit, I keep saying that, that'll come up later. Shyamananda definitely has a mood very different than my own. And I think that my previous resolve to reject him would be appropriate. So Shyamananda came back to the camp late at night. And Hriday Chaitanya's words struck him like a thunderbolt. You have no need to associate with me any longer. And he tried to defend himself. Gauridas Pandit, in your divine grace, though you serve in Sakya Bhav, which you exemplify to perfection, the ultimate goal is Radha and Krishna's pleasure, which I have not, and I have not violated the dynamics of the guru-disciple relationship. And Hriday Chaitanya said, but Gauridas Pandit never explained things like that. And then it was quite shocking. Hriday Chaitanya took a stick and started beating Shyamananda. And the Mahants grabbed him and said, your emotions are carrying you away. This is crazy. Just stop. And they restrained him. And now it's late at night. So in the morning, everyone was real anxious. What is going to unfold? Hriday Chaitanya entered the assembly of Mahants. Everyone is eagerly awaiting. Is he going to reject his disciple? And he announced that from today on, Shyamananda is no longer my disciple. From today on, Shyamananda is my life and soul. And Shyamananda fell and clasped to the feet of his Guru Maharaj, crying, I am your servant eternally, and nothing can ever change that. Now, what happened the night before? As he was sitting in his tent, contemplating whether he should reject Shyamananda, in a dream, which you could say was a darshan, he saw Lord Gauranga coming toward him, and he offered his dandavats. And when he looked up, Lord Gauranga's chadar was soaked in blood. His divine golden form was covered with wounds. And Hriday Chaitanya asked, my lord, what has happened? And what did Lord Gauranga say? This is all by the grace of Hriday Chaitanya. He fell down, weeping bitterly. Now I understand. My lord, if you want to forgive me, you can. If you don't, I will just give up my life, and that will be no loss. All I pray is give me enough time left in this world to beg forgiveness from my disciple Shyamananda, from whom I have learned so much. So therefore, the next day, Shyamananda Pandit, not Pandit, not yet. Shyamananda is no longer my life, no longer my disciple. He's now my life and soul. So then, Hriday Chaitanya told Shyamananda, stay close to Deva Goswami. And then he went back to Ambika Kalna. The three, like brothers, Narottam Das, Srinivas, Shyamananda, they graduated from Jiva Goswami's advanced academy of theology and received their new titles. Narottam became Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivas became Srinivasacharya, Shyamananda became Shyamananda Pandit. And you know the story. Jiva Goswami, in corroboration with Janava Devi, established the inaugurated the first book distribution party. Now, Shyamananda Pandit did not want to leave Vrindavan. He did not want to leave Jiva Goswami, especially because Hriday Chaitanya told him to stay close to Jiva Goswami. But Jiva Goswami reminded him, remember what Srimati Radharani told you in the prophecy, that you would evangelize Orissa in the company of Rasikananda. So they went out, the books were stolen, and you all know that whole long drama. So Srinivasacharya was wise. He could understand that the life works of the six Goswamis, the only copies, could not have been stolen by thieves and be lost to this world. This is obviously another pastime unfolding. So at the time they were in Bengal, which was his Prabhudatta Desh, so he sent Narottam Das Thakur back to East Bengal, Shyamananda Pandit to Orissa, which at the time was both spiritually and politically a low ebb, because Maharaj Prataprudha's powerful dynasty had been overthrown by the marauding Mughal iconoclasts and Pathans who desecrated Jagannath's temple. And the series of wars between the Pathans and their enemies created so much hardship and torture and abuse for the Vaishnavas. It required commandos of both political and spiritual force to restore the spiritual dignity of Orissa and especially Jagannath Puri. So, rising to the occasion, Shamananda Pandit arrives, and Sher Khan, a general in Akbar's army, a student of the six Goswamis, became the political military commando, who is normally a very peaceful man, but when peaceful means failed, he resorted to force to drive the Pathans out of Puri, surround them in Cuttack, where he returned to Puri, leaving the rest of the expulsion in the hands of his qualified generals. And then Shyamananda Pandit finally met Rasikananda, who became his disciple. They went out on Harinam Sankirtan. And while on Nam Sankirtan, an extremely fanatical, militant, Pathan iconoclast, Sher Khan, infuriated to see the blissful Vaishnavas attacked with his army and threatened the Vaishnavas to discontinue this kirtan. So what did Vaishnavas do? They came back the next day with more devotees. Sher Khan attacked. It became violent this time until all the Muslims' beards and mustaches burst into flames. They began coughing up blood and they ran away. Third day on the kirtan, Sher Khan comes running up alone. Looked like he was shaved up, but it was just hair was burned off. And he fell at the feet of Shyamananda Pandit, begging him, "Please give me shelter. Allah appeared to me in a dream and has been slapping me ever since, saying he has a golden form who's named Gauranga Mahaprabhu and you're his favorite devotee, and I will never find shelter or solace or peace until I surrender and take initiation from you." And Sher Khan became Chaitanya Das, who joined the Sankirtan movement. So, you know, Lord Gauranga established a renaissance of devotion. There was a second renaissance with the effects of Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivasacharya, Shyamananda Pandit. And according to prophecy, he evangelized all of Orissa, established it back to its previous pristine spiritual dignity and glory, and was preaching forcefully in his songs like that of Narottam Das Thakur, which just melt the hearts of anyone. And his disappearance pastime, we're observing tonight, was very similar to that of Narottam Das Thakur. Because it was when he heard that Hriday Chaitanya had departed this world, followed very quickly by the news that his dear disciple Damodar had also departed this world. And then, without the association of those great souls, one his Guru Maharaj, one his disciple, he began the series of events leading into his disappearance pastime. The temple established by, or at least inspired by, Shyamananda Pandit, Radha Shyama Sundar, is one of the seven main temples of Vrindavan. And also, Radha Shyam, the deities in Krishna Balaram Mandir, established by Srila Prabhupada. So this pastime, very inspiring, also very illuminating into the dynamics of Guru Tattva, and how different gurus can have different bhavas. And they may even have disciples with a so-called higher bhav. But everything is resolved. In what?
Praying.
Everything is resolved in prayer. And after all the dramas and traumas of spiritual life, everything ends in bliss. So never be discouraged. And always persevere with faith, devotion, and most of all, love. And everything will end in bliss when we see that it was all to help us take shelter of Guru, take shelter of Vaishnavas, take shelter of Krishna, to lose interest in this material world and attain the perfection of life in returning back home, back to Godhead. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? Yes. Please, Guru.
By the grace of Sri Chaitanya.
I heard that you and Akhilananda were scouting out the Ratha Yatra route and came across some big volume of ice cream.
By the grace?
By the grace of Hrida Chaitanya. Hare Krishna. Yes.
Maharaj, the pastimes of great devotees are filled with trials and tribulations. We seem to think that we want everything to go smoothly in our execution of service. But and if it, when it doesn't, then we are frustrated, or we try to blame others, or try to find the cause for that breakdown. Analyzing it politically, even trying to blame Krishna or other devotees. What should be the proper mentality, noticing how many things went wrong in the lives of great devotees?
Just remember the Pandavas. Everything went smoothly, didn't it? From trials and tribulations comes the opportunity to develop patience and perseverance. And of course, you'll miss that if you're seduced by the temptation to blame or escape or deny. But if you take it as an opportunity to cultivate patience, determination, enthusiasm, then you will find in the process you develop character. And from character comes hope. Trials make us stronger if we take shelter of Krishna. If we resort to blame and shame and criticism, we're finished. If we see it as not why me, but try me, so that I can become stronger, to become a worthy servant, to realize that Krishna's holy name is our only shelter. Krishna's holy name and the association of Vaishnavas and the blessings of Guru, the grace of Hrida Chaitanya, is our only shelter. Then we become strong. And we become hopeful, and become determined, and become stronger. Because we all have one final exam coming, it's called death. Everything in the interim is preparation. If you're not prepared properly, you will fail your final exam, and that is unfortunate. So we're receiving trials to prepare for the final exam.
On the same point, what causes a feeling of hopelessness, which is obviously the opposite of hopeful or full of hope? Sometimes we feel hopeless. And is that a good feeling, or can it be utilized, or is it complete?
Just is it open Chaitanya Charitamrita. To hope against hope produces only misery. Utter hopelessness is the greatest happiness. Isn't that great solace? It means don't place your hope in this material world. Place it in Krishna, in Guru, in Vaishnavas. That becomes strength. That becomes hope. Apostle Paul describes it very beautifully. He went through trials and tribulations like anything. He said, count it all for joy. And rejoice in everything. Because when I am weak, then I'm strong because I take shelter. When I'm strong, then I'm weak because I forget how dependent I am. The trials help us realize how small we are. How we need to take shelter. And when we do, we become fortunate and we become stronger in preparation. These little tests are preparations for the final exam. So you become hopeless if you give up. Nobody's a failure until they quit. If you keep trying and keep praying, keep begging with all humility for Krishna's grace. And most of all, when you feel that grace coming to and through you, there is nothing so encouraging as that. And it will come if we simply take shelter and call out in all humility, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Anything else? Yes.
In a similar line, what would you answer to the question why we have to learn through suffering? Why Krishna couldn't make it differently since you can do anything? That was the question I got and I wasn't satisfied with my answer.
What was the question?
Why we have to learn through suffering, why it can't just be easy. Because we are too attached to our own resources and our own pleasures and our own attachments.
But why Krishna couldn't like arrange it differently, that we would just work differently?
Like arrange it that we wouldn't have to have suffering? Well, then he would have to take away our free will. It's easy for Krishna to take away suffering. He just makes robots instead of jivas. What's the difference between a robot and a jiva? A robot's just programmed to do whatever the designer intends. Therefore, they don't have to make mistakes. They don't have to suffer. But they can't love. The jiva has free will, because without free will there's no question of love. The option to love necessitates the freedom to turn our back on love's call, and that's the source of all suffering, beginning with us coming to the material world, which is an ocean of suffering. It's samsara. It's a forest fire. Nobody intentionally started it. And nobody can stop it. Because it's designed to be miserable. Because otherwise we'd be happy to stay here forever and we would thereby never experience true happiness.
Yes. So you're saying the ecstasy actually comes for suffering, like Kunti Devi. She didn't want it to be comfortable. She wanted the suffering so that she would be closer.
That comfort, that security, that so-called pleasure is our real suffering. And it takes a superior kind of suffering to wake us up and realize this world is not our home. If it just remained comfortable, we would never accept that truth. We'd be happy to stay here forever if it was comfortable. And then we would be deprived the privilege of the soul in rendering, in surrendering. Now, that's another word that we don't like to hear, because you think surrender means you're going to lose something. You're going to lose something of value, especially your freedom. Doesn't mean that at all. Surrender means lay down your burdens, your defenses, and simply accept Krishna's grace. You don't do that in a comfortable condition, because we are conditioned. But our own comforts, conveniences, and pleasures is, according to Prahlad Maharaj, the source of our suffering, because we're attached. And we have to give up that attachment to experience Krishna's protection and love. And we suffer only to the extent that we are attached. If it was all comfortable, nice, and easy, we would be complacent to stay here forever and remain deprived of the purpose and goal and reward of human life. It's not the nature of the jiva to take exclusive shelter of Krishna when he's in a state of comfort and pleasure. It's the nature of the jiva that he turns to Krishna when he's suffering. Now, by practice, you can learn how to take shelter always. But that doesn't come natural in a state of pleasure. It comes naturally in a state of suffering. It doesn't mean we're doomed to suffer forever, because when you learn to take shelter, then it doesn't matter, happiness or distress, you will take shelter. And then you rise above these dualities and these temporalities. Did it die again?
Hit the button behind. Turn it on.
Bluetooth. Pairing.
Who's in there? That means it's ready to go.
Any other comments or questions? Yes.
Maharaj, was this the difference with Hriday Chaitanya and Shyamananda Pandit, was that mostly Leela, would you say? Because wasn't it that Hriday Chaitanya also had a similar thing with his own guru? Isn't it? Because he saw Lord Garanga and Lord Nityananda, or like they had come off the altar or something. Isn't it something like that, where his own guru had put him in charge of the deities, and then the deities were going to leave on Sankirtan, and he didn't believe Hriday Chaitanya, and that's how he got his name, isn't it?
It's a little different.
Like that. Well, would you say that it's mostly...
It's all Leela.
Yeah.
These are all eternal associates of Goloka Vrindavan. What are they doing here in this world? They're acting like sadhakas to teach and inspire us. And there is such great wisdom and inspiration in their teachings, examples, and pastimes. That's why they come, for us, not for any purpose of their own. So that we can experience the real pleasure of surrender and service eternally in our homeland, which we'll be deprived of if we're satisfied with the pleasures of this world. Yes.
So one may, after hearing all these different leelas and pastimes of Acharyas, and realize that what great association they had, in whether it's of the six Goswamis or whether it's the direct disciples of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or Nityananda, then I remember relating to one of my old things where, you know, I was thinking all these, what about us? We're coming to a platform, everyone we're hearing these examples, they're such high devotees with such high association that we could almost feel like hopeless, except I was told not to become hopeless. But the difference is, how do then one secure, whether it's life after life, birth after birth, or even in this lifetime, you know, good association, elevated association, since practically 75% comes from good association and sharing the name. So how does one aspire to actually have that and beg for that so that one may get it in this life and many others?
How does one aspire for that good association?
Or what is, whether it's aspiring or praying, or what is, how does one obtain it?
By greed, lolium. You have to cultivate greed. Not greed for things of this world.
No. But it takes one to actually understand that that's what one needs. Otherwise, we may become complacent thinking, oh, I'm a good devotee, I have a house, I have a family, I have a wife, I'm chanting, not so much problems are coming to me, and we think, oh, that everything's nice, devotional service. Then if that's in case, then how do you develop the greed to actually go further?
Nasta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavatyutama shloke bhaktir bhavadinashtake. Regularly hearing the Bhagavat. Now how do we stay steady in hearing the Bhagavat? By rendering service to the pure devotee. Then all that is troublesome to the heart is practically destroyed to nil in loving devotional service for the Supreme Lord, who is glorified in exalted prayers and hymns, is established as an irrevocable fact. So the lolium, the greed, the longing, the yearning comes by hearing. And when we hear, and we chant in response, Shravanam Kirtam Smaranam, and then remember, and then Padasevanam, pilgrimage, parikrama. Nine process culminating in Atma Nivedanam, surrender of the soul.
So Narottam Das Thakur says that one, to effectively have, or we can say Ras, in chanting, one has to be able to chant at the same time, either remember the pastimes between Radha and Krishna and his eternal associates and Braja, or verses. So that otherwise that flavor, that ras, that between God and Krishna won't inspire to the individual. So sometimes we go chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, and you know our brains may be, you know, wandering just like in the Bhagavad, from wherever the mind wanders due to the unsteady and flickering nature, must bring back himself. So a lot of times we're chanting, but we don't chant with the emphasis of trying to remember that relationship between Krishna and Krishna.
When our chanting is proper and perfect, from the sound of the holy name, the form of the Lord will appear in our hearts. From the form of the Lord is his associates, his holy dham, all manifesting one after another, beginning with the root of hearing and chanting. Everything follows sequentially. Yes?
Dhavandas Thakur tells us how Lord Krishna is sometimes a big mischief maker, and he causes dissension amongst the ranks of the devotees. And then Dhavandas Thakur tells us that if we take sides with this party or that party in these quarrels, then Krishna will destroy us. So why should we place so much faith in him?
Why should we place so much faith in a rascal and a thief?
Exactly. A mischief maker.
And why is he dark? Because he's crooked. And what happened after he delivered Kubja? Krishna was afraid. News is going to get back to Braj. And sure enough, a letter comes from Lalita. My mistress, who is straight, you have no interest in her heart. But this lady who is crooked is naturally accommodated into your form. So he's crooked, he's dark, he's a thief, he's mischievous, he creates dissension. How else could he steal our hearts without having all these qualities? He would never make his way into our hearts and steal them away if he did not have these qualities. But Vrindavan Das Thakur emphasizes that in these dissensions amongst devotees, take it, and it may not be literally accurate, but for your own protection, take it as pastimes. For your own protection. And don't take sides. Because if you take sides with one, you're against the other. And they're all dear to Krishna. And conflict can be a supreme means to reach deeper unity and harmony. By working through some superficial differences to reach a deeper unity and harmony.
That's exactly what we saw in your story.
Mm-hmm. And you see that in the whole series of events in the life of Shyamananda Pandit. I mean, devastating. Heartbreak. And drama. And controversy. Yeah. But what was the result? Everyone came closer to one another, closer to Krishna, and closer to home. And came out with deeper appreciation for one another. Because they had the humility and the sobriety and the maturity to work their way through the superficial differences to some unity and harmony on a deeper level. So, devotional service means you also have to develop character so that you don't get seduced into fault-finding, blaming, criticism, politics, because then you fall away. Yes, Kartik.
My question is like,
hey, Claudia.
Thank you, Maharaj, for a wonderful class. And my question is that previously Prabhuji asked regarding sadhana and regarding how to improve our spiritual life. So, being a grihastha, you know, with the kids, we may not have enough time to do quality.
Prioritize balance, which is not a static achievement. It's a dance, it's an art. Holy name is our only shelter. Raising children is an essential service. Balance as much as possible. The important thing is faith that Krishna will compensate. If we're doing our level best, Krishna knows it. And if we're deficient in some areas, if we're doing our best, he'll compensate. So you may be thinking some days that you're so distracted in your japa because you're overwhelmed with other services. Now that may be because you're considering it from your own perspective, that, you know, I really want to be focused, I'm attached to the bliss of being focused, but circumstantially I'm distracted with other things that's taking my mind all over the place and I'm not happy with my state of consciousness. Man looks at the outer, Krishna looks at the heart. He looks at how seriously and sincerely we're trying to do our best with the different essential services at hand. And if we're deficient in some ways, if we're trying our best, we'll compensate. You can't use that as an excuse to not do your best, because then it doesn't work. What does it... Her question is, what does it mean that the grace is coming through you? We're totally dependent on Krishna's grace. And really, that's what we're begging in chanting Hare Krishna. Hara is Krishna's grace, which is our only approach to Krishna. So we're totally dependent on grace. But you can't take grace for yourself. Grace is a dynamic. When it comes to you, you have to allow it to come through you and extend it to others. It's the reciprocation in which the dynamic stays vibrant. Grace is not something you can hoard for yourself. When it comes to you, you have to let it go through you and extend it to others. Otherwise, it becomes static and not ecstatic or dynamic. So, chanting Hare Krishna is begging for grace, and it comes. But you have to share it, or it stops. The dynamic is in the sharing. To you, through you, to others.
Thank you. And so he was repeating Shyamananda Pandit by the grace of Hridaya Chaitanya, by the grace of the Guru. So how we can understand this, since the Guru was not even aware, really? I mean, at least externally. What was going on?
That doesn't negate the principle of grace. Yes, you're right. He wasn't aware. And still it was coming through.
Right. Yeah, that's my... Yeah.
Because he's surrendered. But this repeated statement throughout, by the grace of Hridaya Chaitanya, even when he wasn't aware of what was going on. You know, gradually it became to be known in Braj, you know, what actually happened, gradually. Outside of Braj, There was no understanding. And it was only when the name was officiated by Jiva Goswami Shyamananda Pandit that the actual story that had come to be known well inside Braj was shared with the rest of the Gaudiya community much later. Shyamananda Pandit explained it so perfectly himself. Sakyabhav, which is personified to exemplary heights in Hriday Chaitanya and Gauridas Pandit, does not neglect Madhurya Ras. It's a component of it. It doesn't neglect it. Ultimately, it's a component in that larger dynamic. So even though he wasn't aware of it,
Krishna, they are always together. So, I don't know if it's in that case. So, it's almost like Krishna was reciprocating with. He still was blessed. But Krishna was reciprocating because he surrendered to Guru, meaning to Krishna. And even if Guru was not aware, Krishna and Guru, they're always together. So, Krishna was reciprocating.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes. Okay, Gauridas Pandit is Subal, one of the Sakas in Sakya Ras. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati has explained Guru Tattva in terms of the inner and outer circles. There's an outer circle in which, as is commonly acknowledged, Lord Nityananda is the Adi Guru, which is true of the 4 out of 5 primary rasas, excluding Madhurya. Who is Guru Tattva in Madhurya? Right. What's the relationship between the outer and the inner? Everyone is serving for the ultimate pleasure of Radha and Krishna, even though the emphasis may be Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya. It's all ultimately for the pleasure of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, though the emphasis may be on different rasas. It's all for that higher purpose, so they're all working together and harmoniously for that goal. So then, another important question naturally arises. You know, if your guru is in one rasa, and it turns out that you're in a so-called higher rasa, how does that work? One in the outer circle can be transferred to the inner circle with a recommendation from Lord Balaram, Nityananda.
I was thinking just like in Jiva Dharma, where you had both Vrajanath and Shore, there were two. One was, you know, Vijay Kumar was in Madhurya, Vrajanath was in Sakyavas. They both had the same guru, but he also sent both to take Shiksha. And then that Shiksha, the guru at that point, for Vrajanath, he assumed the Subal in his discussions and limited his discussions in Madhurya. And for Vijay Kumar, he opened up all the aspects for Madhurya.
Mm-hmm.
So in this case also, the association with Jiva Goswami as Shiksha Guru sent by Hriday, he was also directly under instructions from Rupa Goswami, even though he wrote some things in Swakya, but not for himself. he also instructed Narottam, Srinivas, and Shyamananda in those teachings, which were not essentially beyond the level or different than the level of Sakyabhava. So in that case, guru, because Shiksha and Diksha Guru are one, both Shiksha or Diksha Guru can become more prominent to a devotee depending on what their own adhikar is.
That's another critical component in this dynamic, is the relationship between Diksha Guru and Shiksha Guru. Ultimately, as Guru is one, and all Gurus are working harmoniously, ultimately for the pleasure of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, though the emphasis may be in different rasas. Anything else? What is the essence of spiritual perfection?
For us.
Pleasing Guru. Which is non-different from shelter of holy name. They're integral to one another. Yes. If it's not obvious, then ask. It's a personal relationship. Yes.
When you're happy inside, you know he's pleased.
What's that?
When you're happy inside, you know they're pleased.
Good point. If you're satisfied internally in your heart, then you can assume that your guru is satisfied with you. But if there's any question, you can always ask.
How come Shyamananda knew that his guru was Hridaya Chaitanya? I'm not sure if I caught this point.
By hearing. Because he was in a Gaudiya family and community who was always discussing Lord Gauranga and his associates, topics of Gauridas Pandit were naturally prominent, especially because they were, well, no, they were no longer in that area, but they were originally from Bengal, by hearing. Hearing the relationship between Gauridas Pandit and Gauranitai and Hridaya Chaitanya, Dukhi Krishnadas developed affection. Just like Rukmini for Krishna by hearing. Same applies for Guru. It may come, always comes largely through hearing. It may come initially only through hearing.
One of the attractive features of the Vaishnavas, the great Vaishnavas that you mentioned, is that they develop intimate friendships and relations and between each other. They become very close. Can you explain how that can be done in the amongst the rank and file devotees? What are the processes for increasing those friendships that make for protection and development of our bhakti?
Simply by eliminating envy from the heart. Then there is natural friendship, unity, and harmony.
Although the medium will see four categories.
Hmm?
Although the medium still will see four categories. Those more advanced, those on the same level, those less fortunate to preach to, and those who are inimical, even though still maintain that discrimination.
Right. Discrimination remains. But amongst amongst Madhya Madhikari, there is friendship. And that friendship is sweet and intimate because it is free of envy.
And well-wishing. They're for well-wisher.
Well, free from envy means well-wisher.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We see some of the God brothers and God sisters who've gone through tremendous austerities in the early days, or some of the Guru Kuli children who suffered together or enjoyed together in different, you know, different situations growing up. Years, decades go by, and they still have very, very close friendships and relationships. It kind of reminds me of the military, when somebody goes to war together, then they meet 20 years later, and they remember those incredible points of intimacy. What is the foundation of that?
There's a misconception in military life that the relationships there are so deep and enduring that there's no comparison. Well, there is a comparison in ISKCON. But the dynamic is that deep, heartfelt connection and relations are not forged in enjoyment and parties. They're forged in hardship and tribulation and trials. That's one thing. The other thing is, in military, everyone feels part of something larger than themselves, with a camaraderie that every man is more committed to the man beside him than he is to himself. It's very selfless, largely because it's part of a larger dynamic. Now, that's a perverted reflection of spiritual life, where we're truly part of a much larger dynamic, and out of compassion, we naturally care for one another more than we do for ourselves. But that dynamic, it's activated and realized in trials and tribulations, not in parties and enjoyments. Not that those shouldn't be there.
It also can be forged in commonality, in the sense that if the interest in hearing, or the interest in a particular type of taste, or a particular type of ras, or whatever that one has, if one has similar snigdha relationship like that, then also that breeds an affection or a closeness.
Camaraderie. Yes. Yeah, it's largely based on similarities, spiritual affinities, which even Krishna has. When Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, "I'm impartial, no one's friend, no one's enemy," he contradicts himself in the second line of the same verse. "But for one who takes shelter in me, I'm a friend to him, and he's a friend in me." Now, how can you put faith in a Lord who contradicts himself in the middle of one verse? Well, you have to listen to what he's saying. You know, previously he's explaining that he has three features: Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. So, in that verse in the ninth chapter, first half of the verse, Paramatma speaking. He's supposed to be impartial. That's his glory. That glory of Paramatma would be a blemish on Bhagavan. So in the middle of the verse, Paramatma falls silent, Bhagavan speaks, exalting his partiality, which is a ornament on him. That which would be a blemish on Paramatma is the ornament on Bhagavan. He is partial. But he's not partial to a set, limited group, because anyone he's inviting to become his devotee.
It's because Paramatma is impartial. Does that mean that there's like the two birds sitting in the tree, and the one bird is just observing, Is that in the sense that the Paramatma is impartial, but Bhagavan, because it's naturally attracted to somebody who's serving and a friend to everybody, it's more of a natural thing, like a mother or father to their child, correct? That's the difference between Paramatma and Bhagavan?
Something like that. There's no rasa with Paramatma.
Yes. Paramatma's leading all the jivas, though, right? And within their heart.
He's listening and waiting.
And like you said just earlier, who's speaking Bhagavad Gita? So, if we know the five different levels of the Bhagavad Gita, we know that Bhagavan Sri Krishna is speaking Bhagavad, but not all the time. Sometimes, like you said, he'll speak as Paramatma, but then also, now he'll come in as his Swayam Bhagavan and, you know, give his fame, Tesam Satyuktanam, so many other verses like that, that are completely, you know, not on the realm of introduction, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so some people will just, you know, become confused on, well, who's actually speaking Bhagavad Gita?
And therefore, he explains it all beforehand. The nature of Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, so that when you hear these different voices following later, you can identify who's speaking and why he's the way he is. All right. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Shyamananda Pandit ki jai. All by the grace of Hriday Chaitanya.
His Holiness Vachana Swami Maharaj ki jai.
Can we say that a little louder? His Holiness Vachana Maharaj ki jai.